Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille.
And this is Roberta Maria Atti.
Here with you with the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today we're going to talk about breasts. Today we're going to talk about women's breasts. Today we're going to talk about a couple of things that have come by my attention, and then Roberta brought me even more information. We'll talk about implants at first. Now, women who get breast implants are more likely than other women to commit suicide. This is the latest research that has come out of University of
Utrecht in Sweden. And this is also the result that appeared in the American Journal of Epidemiology out of Canada.
And a few other studies. There was one from Finland as well, which all suggest that there is a 74% increase in the risk of suicide, or in some cases they found three times as much suicide in women who have had implants. Now, we're not saying the implants caused the suicide. Now, the other information that we used to think was a correlation, what about that, Roberta?
We used to think that women who underwent this kind of surgery had a higher incidence of cancer, among other problems, including immune system problems related to the body's attempt to reject the implants or to get rid of them. Leakage from the implants themselves can cause a lot of problems, but we used to think in general that implants would immediately create a higher incidence of a number of diseases, and that turns out not to be the case.
Although what you've seen is the case. You've seen immune problems with...
Right. What I've seen in the women that I've worked with who have come to me that have had the implants placed in their bodies, they seem to have a higher incidence of chronic immune system problems than other women do. But I cannot say that was not there to begin with. You know what I mean, Armand? That was there already before they got the implants.
So the question becomes, according to the different studies and we have in front of us, here's one study that says infection is a risk associated with any surgical procedure. So infection is risk, and there's toxic shock and other implant-related risks. However, the one about suicide...
That's quite shocking.
That's remarkable. Yeah. And in fact, they showed the highest incident of women who had a large majority of the women who chose to have breast implants had a number of psychiatric disorders that may have led them to choose to get the implants, including body dysmorphia.
Mm-hmm.
Now, body dysmorphia, in case you don't know what that is you hate some part of your body.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just dislike it, but you hate it. You can't look at it. It makes you sick. You hate yourself for it. And people have been driven to suicide because they have body dysmorphia.
Right.
So now, can we say that if they get a breast implant and they commit suicide, is it the body dysmorphia or the breast implant?
Well, I don't know if body dysmorphia includes women who may not hate a part of themselves or their physical self, but certainly do not like a part of their physical self. And Armand, I work, the great majority of the people I work with are women, and I can tell you that probably 95% of them don't like the way they look. And it may not be hatred, maybe that's the extreme of it. I've seen some of that, but not a lot. Maybe you've seen a lot more of that, being that you work in the psychological department. But I certainly can tell you that I have met very few women who have come to me and said, I like the way I look.
This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. It's been suggested that these psychiatric disorders are kind of sitting there, and part of what they came out with is they're highly recommending that you get the kind of psychiatric consultation before getting the implants, because the implant may wind up being a giant disappointment. They found that women who are depressed, women who have implants, have more of a likelihood to have a deep depression underlying the need to get it. So an attempt happens, and then listen to this. The majority of women who have breast implants have two children and are married.
That is the part that I found really fascinating. Well, not fascinating, but very interesting.
What does it suggest to you, Roberta?
Well, it tells me, first of all, I want to address what you just said regarding the idea of maybe making it a requirement that if a woman wants to get implants, she should first have some kind of psychological evaluation just to rule out major depression and or suicidal tendencies. But, of course, the speculation there is that someone who has that much of a need to alter the way they look obviously has a profound sense of dissatisfaction with their bodies. And, of course, that's revealing of a number of other possibilities. But the fact that the majority of the women who seek this kind of alteration of the way they look are women in that group, meaning the housewives, average, you know, I'm assuming around 30, between 30 and 40 years old, with two children. And these are people who have money. These are women who stay home, who choose to be mothers at home, or who go back to their careers after spending some time at home with their kids. That describes a social situation that is typical of our culture, where the nuclear family, the way it's structured, with the father who leaves the home, the mother stay home with the children, can ferment depression in a woman. Because look, you're 30 years old, you have two kids, you are married, you want to be faithful. Some women feel like their life is over.
The chunga chunga leaves. You know, you also, your husband is not as sexually attracted to you any longer.
But he's out in the world. You don't know, you know, you don't know what he's doing, who he's looking at. And you're in the house with the children.
So somebody suggests to you get breast implants and you do it and your life changes radically.
Right.
Now this aging person who had a boring home. I mean, just some of the statistics. Yeah. Women who have had breast implants tend to have four times as many sex partners over their lifetime as women who have not had breast implants. Mm. Four times. It's a multiple of four times as many. They also tend to get hair color changes. Mm-hmm. What did you find interesting about that?
Well, I thought it was interesting that women who get that surgery are also have a tendency to want to change the way they look, not just the breasts, but everything else, including the hair. And so, I don't know, to me, it may be revealing of an underlying fear, for instance, to get older, to look more mature, to look, you know, just to not attract mates. But I'm thinking about the married woman, Armand, the woman who is in a couple situation, and so she's not out there looking for a boyfriend. She's stable in that relationship. What would bring a young mother to compromise her body in that way? Because it is a compromising in the sense that, you know, it could lead to infection, it could lead to a number of problems. What could be so radically, necessary to change the way she looks when she's already in a stable relationship?
Well, you know, I mean, you're in a stable relationship and you've got the house and you've got the cars and you've got the children, and you could get easily bored or depressed. So, number one, it could be just a casual idea. Your friends that you have, your other friends around the neighborhood, women, young women, they've had breast implants, so you get breast implants, like getting tattoos. You know, it could be a thing you do on one level. On another level, it could be that your husband's eye has turned. You know, it's turned to other women who have more bouncy breasts. And so you want to show him that you're still there. Maybe you want to attract him more. And thirdly, to walk down the street, even when you go shopping, and to have those eyes turned towards you is rejuvenating. It makes you feel, for some people, young. But we're not doing a program about breast implants today, by the way. We started off with this because we fell on this research
about
the suicide, and it was just remarkable.
We were not looking for it, but it kind of just glared out at us. 'Cause, I mean, 73% more, that's very high.
2 million women have had breast implants last year.
It seems like, conservatively, 2 million women in the U.S. get breast implants every year.
And the cost is $2,000 now, down to $2,000. Argentina does a special. They do. They have $2,000 specials where you can run down there and get it, and it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, another theorist says that there are people who are obsessed with control over their bodies. They like the exercise. They like the control over their bodies. And part of what they saw in the suicide prevention team at the University of Illinois, they said the women who are obsessed with controlling their bodies, and that includes with strength training and muscle training and dieting and fasting and all the other things they do, have a tendency to get more breast implants, and those are the women they believe have the higher rate of incidence. Mm. It's the control over your body people, the people who are obsessed with a need to control something, so they control their own body.
Aman, remember when Barbie dolls came out? Remember that at first a lot of people objected to the fact that this was a doll that was meant to be a toy for young girls, but she looked so sexually mature. So there was an objection there. And if you remember the Barbie doll is small waist, big breasts compared to body size, really big. And she looks like a teenager with huge breasts. Well, that's the look of the most fertile woman, meaning that throughout a woman's lifespan, when she looks like that, generally it's the time when she's the most fertile. So women who want to look like that all the time, what that says to me, this is my interpretation and there's no judgment, may have difficulties with accepting that life is a constant change, and that we change along with it, and that we may look this way one day and the next day we don't look that way, and that things are never the same. You know, it seems to me that there's this image, and if you don't look like the image, you're nothing.
I remember when I used to hear a lot of nutritionists talking about stay young forever.
Yes.
It was like that, kind of stay fertile forever.
Yes.
You know, look fertile forever, stay fertile. You do get rid of your body fat, which was just the opposite of being fertile. You know, get rid of it all and trim down and have this thing. And it was a stay young forever. Do you notice you don't see those ads anymore out there?
It's true.
You notice they've kind of disappeared, the stay young forever ads?
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
This fascination with breasts being a certain size and a certain look, one wonders where that came from. Well, my friends, we're going to tell you information today about the evolution of the breast obsession, or I wouldn't even say obsession, but I wouldn't say fixation, I'd say emphasis.
Well, it seems that a breast, the way it looks, attracts both males and females. It's not just a sexual thing. It's a universal love symbol for humans. And it is because the breast has evolved through the evolution of human beings. The breast has evolved to signify love, safety, comfort, children, home, family, bonding, safety, you know, all of the things that human beings like and aspire to. The breast is the symbol of all of that. The breast is the symbol of mother, life, eternal
sex,
life.
Mother, sex, mating.
Pleasures, sure. So it's all in there. So if you go to India, I remember the first time as a 19-year-old woman traveling in India, when I saw these goddesses on the doors of the temples with these large round breasts and abdomens and buttocks. Is that how we're supposed to call them on air?
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of surprised that they would be on the temple, on the door of the temple. And yet, you know, there is something sacred about a breast, because breast is the first source of food for human beings. Everyone can relate to the sense of safety that a breast engenders.
Now, why would a breast have been engendered as a sexual attraction? That really becomes fascinating, because if you think about it, it is only humans and a few gorillas.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But it's primarily humans.
There's no animal like human, though.
I could make that my bumper sticker. There is no animal like humans. Right? No, they're really, I mean, we're really unique. But why breasts? What happened in the development?
Right.
What happened in the development of, and now we go into psychohistory, which I love.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, Roberta, tell me the story. What was, there were the early hominids, they were on their hands and knees and...
Well, you see, first of all, we need to say that female humans came up with the brilliant idea of hiding their estrus. And we've talked about this before, but I think it might be a little bit of a refresher course might be in order. Human females don't reveal, unlike other females, don't reveal when they are fertile. That means that they look like they could be fertile at any given time.
Now, fertile means the time
estrus.
When you are most, well, I know, but for some people who don't know what it means.
It means that the time when you can conceive.
The time that you're more likely to conceive, therefore the time when you're most open to receiving sex.
Yes.
The female is in estrus.
When the ovum is ripe and has descended into the fallopian tubes and has reached the womb and is ready for fertilization.
Now, at this point, through the animal kingdom,
right,
the woman
primates,
sends out a signal.
No,
and
not the woman.
The female. Sends out a signal. Well, you know, women. Women dogs. No, the female sends out... The female sends out a signal that says, I'm ready, come and get me.
It's a visual signal. There's
a
swelling.
Well, it's also olfactory.
But it's a visual signal, meaning that the genitalia of the female swells up, and it can turn red or blue or purple or, you know, whatever the species determines the color is, but it becomes very visible and it swells up with water and fluids. So it becomes like an advertisement. And it's, of course, it's in the genital area, so it's in the lower part of the body, and that's where it would be for human females. If we had that estrus display, well, that's where it would be. It would be in the genitals.
Now, and keep in mind that most animals are on their hands and feet.
But some of them stand up.
They're bent, but most of them are bent over, so it is... It's obvious.
It's obvious because they're walking on all fours.
It could be seen and it could be smelled. It could be, it's olfactory as well. They spray, they have a way of announcing.
Right. And this is, of course, always in favor of survival of the species, because, you know, the easier it is to mate, the more attractive an individual is, the more likely the species is to survive. So it's all good. So a long time ago, hominids, meaning human ancestors, lost her estrus, meaning that the male could no longer determine when she was fertile, when the ovum was ready to be fertilized.
Now, why did that happen? I mean, that was survival.
Mm-hmm. That happened because, well, and this is speculation, but it makes a lot of sense to me. It happened because if the estrus is visible and obvious, well, the male is interested for as long as the estrus is there, and once the estrus is over, the male has a tendency to pick up and leave and move on to another female who's in estrus or to something else. But in women, since it's not obvious when the woman is fertile, that keeps the male interested all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because, also, with the hiding of the estrus, what the human female came up with was something that mimics estrus, but that is a permanent fixture of the woman's body, and that is the buttocks and the breast.
Now it's fascinating, and it may be getting a little complicated to see this development as
it came
along.
Well, I don't think it's complicated, Armand.
Well, you know what's really complicated?
It's pretty visual.
You know, it's visual in our mind because we've been looking at this for the last couple of hours. But let me just present this as a picture. A female, a hominid, stands up. She's now getting off her back, right, or off her all fours, and now the humans are starting to stand up. What is going to announce, so from behind the buttocks, right, and we're talking about these two globes with this crease in the middle,
mm-hmm.
becomes a symbol. That is ours. The baboon has it different, right? The different animals have it different, but that buttock thing, that
well,
buttock
actually,
fixation.
The baboon will have it like that when she's in estrus. The females of the baboon, for instance, will develop a buttock like that, but only when she's fertile.
The globe-like buttock?
Well, I mean, not like a human, but it'll swell up.
Yes.
And so then the male will know, oh, there she is.
So having buttocks that were round and had,
and
you know,
visible.
And visible becomes fascination and just like glue for the mating male.
Yes.
And he sees it and he wants to go for it. And I mean, as much as I disagree with the whole concept of nude dancing and bars and pornography, I can understand where this is, how this thing attracts men.
Well, sure, it's biologically designed to be like that.
And they don't have any idea why they're so attracted.
Right.
But it's designed that way. Okay, so now comes the fascinating part. Why breasts? You think breasts are just going to be functional? No, breasts are because not only can you be seen from behind, but you can be seen from in front.
Right.
And the more mates you attract, the more males you attract, the better are your chances for your species to survive and your family tree and your genes.
Mm-hmm.
So now you've got your backside works well.
Right.
Right? But that's when they're behind you.
That's a good way to put it, right?
Your backside.
Your backside
I remember
works
that.
Well.
Your backside. Okay, now comes your front side.
Right.
Well, you know, the obvious organs of genitalia can't be seen. So, you know, you
right.
can't see. You
they're
can't,
a mystery. Mm-hmm.
They're a mystery. So what men invented and what females invented, what the humans invented, was they invented a behind on the chest.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is just remarkable.
Yes, if you think about the breasts and you look at the way they're portrayed in statues and art, they're designed to look like a genitalia in estrus. So that no matter how the female is positioned in relation to the males in her tribe, from the front or the back, as Armand was saying, she's always portraying an image of fertility that the male is always mesmerized by, and so he never leaves. Because the bottom line is, we don't want these males to leave. We want them to stay around so they can help raising the offspring. And the breast does just that. It keeps the men around.
Which is why when you're married and you have two kids, you go...
You want to get the bigger breast.
Okay, but
right.
but to go back to the point of the appearance, Roberta, this is fascinating. Because I know a lot of people are saying, well, what do you mean you have buttocks on your chest?
Mm-hmm.
The fact that the breasts are two globes, that when they're pressed together, when they are together, and if you think about décolleté, or you think about brassieres that are meant to give you cleavage, it is the very, very cleavage that is what the males are attracted to. It is the thing that takes place when the two breasts are pushed together. They look just like a rump.
Yep.
They look like the backside.
Yes.
If you take the nipples away, the nipples not being there, you're seeing. So what?
Which is exactly what the dresses do, by the way. They will compress the breasts together, so you just see the cleavage, but you don't see the nipple. So it looks exactly like a rump.
So you see, you've got a front side attracting, sending out the signals, and you've got a backside sending out the signals. And this is part of an explanation for why there is such a fascination with breasts, because breasts are not good for you.
No.
Large breasts hurt you. You can't.
Absolutely.
You,
not
you
only
run
that,
around with them. You
not
can
only
get
that, but it's really a part of the body that gets in the way of a lot of activities, that is vulnerable, that makes the woman less able to care for, to protect herself. To also, they require more food, because it's a lot more flesh to feed and to maintain. So it's really a liability in terms of how much it costs for a female to have breasts.
And more disease and more...
More disease, more likelihood to develop any kind of pathology, of course. But in spite of all that, and in fact, researchers were looking for a reason other than sexual attraction to justify the presence of a breast in females of the human species, and they were not able to find any other reason. In fact, the breast is a liability.
So there we are. So here we are with something that seems to be essential, seems to be very important, something that is there, and it is there because it appears that as humans stood up, they want it to be noticed from the front and the back.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to attract, and they wanted the males to believe that they were in constant estrus.
Right.
Right? And but they also had developed the ability to say no.
Well, of course, that has to come together with the increased sexuality requires also the power to deny access to that sexuality, because otherwise it would be a severe liability.
Well, talk a little more about that. What do you mean?
Well, if it came with enslavement and just complete access at any given time, with the female not able to protect herself from the incoming males, she would be destroyed in a very short amount of time. So, fortunately, that increased sexuality came with the power to say no.
This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. We're talking about the obsession with breasts. We're talking about breast implants, the breast implant fascination. I mean, it's just amazing. 2 million women a year.
Well, Armand, if you think that human females are the only animal whose breasts are always swollen, any other mammal or any other animal, the breast, except for the time when the female is lactating, the breast will be like an empty sack. But female in the humans is always swollen, which tells you that is designed to look like she's, you know, fertile. So, of course, an implant, well, goes right along with that idea.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll play you a little music. And right after that, my friends, we'll continue our discussion.
Thank you.
time for a little wake up.
I said that was nice. That's nice music. I like
Zihan, Z-I-H-A-N, and Kamien, K-A-M-I-E-N. And there they are, right? They're Zihan and D-Z-I-H-A-N, D-Z-I-H-A-N.
Where are they from? Zihan.
I don't know. It's from an album called Ocean Drive.
Nice.
You can just picture people dancing to this with implants. You know, it's bouncy kind of music. But, you know, let's talk about that for a minute, Roberta. You know, let's not leave out the jiggle factor.
Sure.
You know, and we're not making a joke when we say it. It's a true human phenomenon.
Yes, well, the jiggle phenomenon. Factor is, we talked about it when we did the sexuality series, which, by the way, if you're a new listener and you've not heard it, you might want to go to Armand's website, and it's all there, isn't it, Armand?
It's still there. It's going to be up there for about a month, and then we're going to pull it down.
Really?
But it's the human sexuality series, which is just like the stuff we're talking about today, but in great depth.
Right. Anyway, so the jiggle effect is that which is designed to catch the attention of the male's eye, because the jiggle effect is what a hunter will be alerted by when he's on the lookout for prey.
So if you're on the Serengeti and you're kind of hungry,
right,
the thing you would rather have more, if you're a lion, and this is your lion or a tiger, the thing you want is something fatty, because if it's fatty, it's going to be even better than if it's skinny.
Absolutely. If it's fatty, it's what you need.
So you get a running gazelle that's not as fatty as if you get a little
rhinoceros, for instance.
Yeah, baby rhinoceros kind of running by, and you see jiggle.
The jiggle, right. So the jiggle effect is attractive because the in the brain of humans, sexuality and hunger, appetite, are close together. So when one is stimulated, the other one is as well, or they're not too far. And I think it's designed that way on purpose, but regardless, the point is that when the male's eye is focused on something that jiggles, all kinds of things happen in the male's body. One of them is sexual arousal.
So the jiggle factor means it's going to turn your eye. You see, if you're a hunter, and this is male and female, men and women, if they see something walking by that has a bounce to it, now, it's a scientific term, the jiggle factor. It is not our...
We didn't come up with this
just to make fun of it. But when you see something undulate like that, and you see something jiggle, it means, oh, that's something I should automatically grab. Sometimes you'll see, if you have a cat and they see a fly in a room, there's something automatic inside them that says, I got to get that fly.
Sure.
And they'll go crazy chasing after the fly.
It has become instinctual. Yes.
So there is something instinctual inside humans that make notice of the jiggle. So if a woman walks down the street, and if her clothing are such, and if she's got the kind of poundage that allows for a little extra jiggle, she's going to be noticed by men and women because everybody's a predator. Everybody's a potential hunter.
That's very true, Armand. That's what I believe, too. I mean, we still really have 99% of our nervous system, digestive system, and everything else come from hunter-gatherers. We have not yet evolved out of that. So, of course, it makes sense that we would still have that kind of a reaction at a visual clue like that. And what I was going to
I wonder, Roberta, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I wonder if a statistic has ever been done, and we should search this out.
Okay.
If a woman walks down the street and she's bouncy, let's say she's got ample everythings, and she's walking down the street, what percentage of the men versus what percentage of the women notice that woman? Mm-hmm. I'll make you a bet there's no fewer women than men, because I think women are attracted to it also.
I agree. And this
not just as a threat.
And this actually leads into what I was going to say next, which is that breast really is used primarily as a form of body language. Because in primates and monkeys, as well as humans, the female will display her breast, for instance, to her young when she wants her young to come to her. See, if you have a toddler, and I'm talking now about a gorilla, let's say. You are a mama gorilla and you have a toddler around there, and the toddler is all over the place, and you want the toddler to come to you. You stand up and show your breast to the baby, and the baby sees the breast and is attracted to it. So there's a universal attraction that happens because the breast signals mama, signals food, signals safety. And this is what females of the human species do as well. When the baby is crying, is upset, the woman will give her breast, will nurse the baby. The baby sees the breast and immediately it calms down. So there is something so deeply reassuring and pleasurable at the sight of a breast, not just for males, and it's not just sexual, it's really profoundly human, that when we see a breast, we feel loved just at the sight of it. Because it means something good is coming. There is friends around us. It's safe to be here. We are in the presence of family. We are at home. See, all of that is body language. It cannot be verbalized. And therefore, it affects the brain immediately, much faster than any word could ever do. The sight of a breast triggers all kinds of responses in the body of men and women that are profoundly positive and life-affirming in many ways. Now, unfortunately, the breast has become part of sexuality with all of the taboos that go along with that, and so unfortunately a lot of how women would naturally use their breasts has been suppressed. Being that I'm from Europe, Armand, I have to tell you, for instance, on the beaches in Italy, women don't wear bras, unless they choose to. It's not required by law. And women are much more liberal about their bodies, and everyone seems happier. And I'm not saying that because I'm biased.
I know.
I remember, I mean, you know, the first time I went to the beach, I had my little babies, and they were little, and I let them run around naked, and some people scolded me for allowing other people to see my children naked, as if there was something wrong with their nakedness. So unfortunately, breasts, I think, have become the target of a lot of neurosis and psychosis and problems, unnecessarily so, when in origin they were the symbol of the, you know, the probably love itself. So I think,
you know, it's a funny thing that more, one would imagine, Roberta, that there would be more icons that are breast-shaped, more milk cartons that were shaped like breasts.
Shouldn't
more,
they be?
More houses that would be shaped. I mean, what happened to the advertising industry? You know, I mean, didn't they get on to the fact that this is such an attractive thing? There must be a reason why not. There must be something about it that is unappealing as well as appealing. Mm. Because otherwise you'd have buildings shaped like breasts. You know, there's the breast building. You know, there's the breast car. You know, no, I'm serious. I don't
No,
mean
you're
just
making
as
a good
joke.
Point. You're making a good point.
Isn't it true that there are many species of gorilla or orangutan, and the women actually pump up their breasts and stimulate their breasts?
Yeah, sure. The females actually will be observed to play with their nipples. I guess that's how to describe it, best describe it, and even to suck on their own breasts when they're lactating. Now, is that a playful behavior? What does that communicate other than enjoyment of being alive? I don't know, but, you know, you can speculate. And...
Well, wait, would one imagine that an orangutan who could suck on its own breast when it's lactating likes the taste of the milk? I mean, maybe
it's...
You think they could lactate or give milk when they're sucking on it?
Sure. If the female is lactating, sure. And, by the way, I do know that in Europe, back, I don't know, maybe 100 years ago, when food was more scarce at time, women who were, what is it called, a wet nurse? Women who, for a living, sold their milk, would actually lactate other adults when there was no food. And so much so that the brain of the woman is wired in such a way whereby the right breast is always the breast that belongs to the community, let's say, whereas the left is always saved for the baby. The breast only, the left breast only belongs to the baby. Only the baby has access to the left breast, whereas the right, when needed, belongs to the family. And this is tradition in Italy, in France, in Spain, so that if there was no food to put on the table, and if this woman had milk, well, she would feed not just the baby. The baby would be on the left breast, and the right breast would be there for the rest of the family. That's not... So the orangutan, to answer your question, I'm sure it's a matter of curiosity, exploration, pleasure, display of, what... some attractive behavior. And then what these primates would be also observed to do was that once the female would start to display this kind of behavior, like self touching her breasts, in that way, the male would join in and start to do the same thing, which is something that, I mean, it's almost pornography if you apply it to the human sphere. It's almost something that people would be, offended by if you describe that kind of thing.
Yet in every, in practically every place where there's erotic dancing, one of the key factors for erotic dances is to touch their body.
Sure.
And if they touch their own body, and especially touching their breast, that makes it even more attractive.
So maybe, Armand, what we're saying is, why are humans so, conflicted?
Conflicted about it, yeah. Sure, and there's so much stuff that comes with it, because... if you think about early childhood development, I know people whose mother were so distressed mm-hmm. when they were born that the milk tasted bad.
Sure.
Now, doesn't that happen to mothers where the baby will actually reject your milk?
It does happen, although my belief is it happens when the woman has been put through such torment psychologically that she's not able to bond with her offspring.
Okay. Whether she's put through torment or she's a tormented soul.
Well, yeah.
Whatever it is that she has a torment that she carries on the inside, it prevents the bonding, and that very baby may go to either a bottle supplement mm-hmm. or go to a wet nurse.
Sure.
Right? So now we have this thing about how the breast becomes the very first symbol of our nurturance with our mothers. And how we relate to that, how do we relate to being nurtured by our mothers? Well, many people will associate motherhood with great things because your mom is the one
right.
who takes care of you. But for many people, the very thought of their mothers is a toxic thought.
Yes.
And for them, they have to reject this motherhood thing. For many people, they reject it completely. And I think many people have tried to disown.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about the exercise and the fact that people exercise to the point of reducing fat, or you think about anorexia, both,
mm-hmm.
or bulimia, I always hear the psychological rejection of the mother.
Yeah.
Because if you're rejecting your female part, don't you want to get rid of your breasts? And why do you want to get rid of them? Why do you want to be zero fat?
Right.
And have no, and what happens to you hormonally when you do that?
Well, of course, you masculinize, because in order for your body to have enough estrogen, you have to have enough fat. And when you don't have enough fat, your estrogen levels go down to a point where you can no longer menstruate. And in relation to your androgens, which are the male hormones, you become more male-like. And so the breast becomes smaller, more muscle and less fat. And by the way, I did want to say, Armand, that we used to think that breasts were a storage of fat in terms of survival, and it turns out that they aren't. They, in fact, don't store. I mean, they are made of fat, but really the fat that is used in a famine is the fat of the thighs and the hips and the buttocks, not the fat of the breast. The breast is swollen with fluid, really for the purpose that we described before, for attracting and keeping a mate at home.
So if you have a rejection of your own maternal mm-hmm. part, if you've never developed it, you know, if you don't have... See, I think young men, if they don't have a father, or they don't have a father they could really bond with, they never learn how to become men. And by men, I don't mean macho men. They just don't know what it is to be a man.
Right.
And they don't know what it is to be a father. And they don't know what it is to be in charge. And they don't know what it is to be a husband. They don't know it because they've never seen it and they've never felt it.
I agree.
Women who were deprived of mothers or whose mothers were so distant really don't know either. They have to make it up. Now, mm-hmm. if you're really lucky, you make it up right. You invent the right idea. You see the way it is and you portray it. But most people will feel the damage of it.
Yeah.
They will feel the damage of not being able to identify with their own sexuality, with their own femininity. And I don't only mean sexuality with that. Mm-hmm. I mean all of it.
Sure.
The maturity, you know, the nurturing part of you as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think psychologically what it tells us is the following, that people who reject their bodies in so many different ways, either through dysmorphia, mm-hmm. hating their bodies, or by depriving themselves and hurting their bodies in one form or another, you know, I think that that's saying something about their early childhood
experience. With their mother.
Yeah, I really do.
Well, yes, I agree with you, Armand.
And I think that it's a symbol that it has to be healed, and it should be healed. And I think rather than, although I hate to say that I disagree with it, I think implants are really a sign of a disturbance. Mm-hmm. I think it's a sign. It's a sign you are not a happy person with the body that you have.
Armand, I don't think that's a judgment. I think that anytime we try to improve upon what we are given as a, you know, physical self, it implies that we're not able to accept what we're given. So I don't hear judgment in what you're saying. I hear more that you're a professional in the field of psychology and you're expressing an opinion based on what you understand of the underlying emotional dynamic. We're not here to judge anyone. We're just here to bring you food for thoughts, right?
So there we are, my friends, and here what we've brought you today is two really important pieces of information. To me, the most fascinating is that breasts developed in humans as a way of recreating buttocks on the chest.
I mean,
if you didn't hear today's program and you just heard us make that statement just now, you can go to the website, thepositivemind.com, and then download and replay what we said earlier.
You know what, Armand? I just have to compliment us, you and myself, for bringing up these things on air, because I don't hear anyone else bring them up. I don't hear anyone else do this kind of programming, and I think it's needed because people are so conflicted and suffering with their bodies and their image and this, you know, that at least let's bring it up and let's talk about it. Let's see how it came to be the way it is. I want to thank you for giving me an opportunity to join you in this kind of program. And thank you from the audience for bringing it on air.
And I want to thank Pacifica Radio and WBAI for having a format that would allow us, because, you know, on a lot of many other stations, there'd be a lot of objections.
We would be beheaded.
Run out of town. Tar and feather those fellas. I remember once I was working in Germany, and I was in Germany, and I proposed that we look at the children of people who are Nazi soldiers, mm-hmm. and try to open up what their feelings were about being. So I just said, well, this makes sense. Here we are in Germany, and this has never been talked about. Let's talk about it. Well,
I can imagine.
As soon as I proposed it, mm-hmm. I got such a force coming in my direction. Don't you dare open the subject.
Not allowed
to talk about it.
Well, I guess when things are so filled with pain that humans don't know how to, you know, deal with it without dealing with the pain, sometimes what they do is don't deal with it at all.
And human sexuality is one of those areas where people are filled with confusion
filled
and
with
pain.
Filled with pain and confusion, yes.
So let me make a recommendation, my friends, once again. If you go to the website, thepositivemind.com, there's a series of human sexuality still available.
Why are you taking it down in a month? Leave it there.
Because we just don't have the room for all of the programs.
Oh, my goodness.
We have hundreds of programs up there for people.
Yeah, but that one is a landmark.
Hey, I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. Roberta and I will be following through on the discussions on women's sexuality mm-hmm. even further.
Oh,
we'll be taking up more programs.
I give out my site?
Sure.
www.creativehealthsolutions.org.
And you send me an email, armand@brainlink.com, my friends. I'll be back with you tomorrow mm-hmm. at 1 p.m.